In a political landscape dominated by oranges, blues, and reds, it's not easy being green. Yet despite the obvious faults in our political system that exist like so many elephants in the room, John Percy, leader of the Nova Scotia Greens, wants your vote on October 8th. The Greens don't have the million-dollar budget. In fact, they're not even fielding a full slate of candidates this election. They also don't have a whole bunch of election promises. Theirs is more a long-term message where we, the voters, are asked to make personal lifestyle choices that will positively affect the future. The following interview with John Percy is a long one and clocks in about 30 minutes. If you've got an issue that you're particularly interested in and don't feel like listening to the whole interview, you can just reference the legend that accompanies this audio piece. For the Halifax Media Co-op, I'm Miles Howe. So John Percy, we're now into the Nova Scotia election campaign. You're a bit late to the game, but you're out of the gates now with the Green Party of Nova Scotia. Maybe first we can talk about the difficulties in having a grassroots party and fielding a full field of candidates.
The big difficulty is that it's very difficult to organize on a provincial level with a limited number of people. We have limited resources, and getting the word out tends to become more of a one-on-one situation. The people we have are working very hard. They're working probably three times as hard as they should be. Again, that's it's a process of building. All parties go through a process of losing members and gaining members. I know after most elections, party membership in any party drops off. They all just go away. And when everyone gets excited about elections, they all start joining the party again. It's difficult when we don't get a lot of media coverage. We have determined that it's going to be much better for us in the long run to have a strong social media presence than it is to try and break into what we consider the mainstream media. And we've been fairly successful with that. The trap there is that you may end up preaching to the converted, and you're only talking to people who are like-minded. I prefer to speak with people who disagree with me, because you know, they just might have a really good idea. And maybe I'm wrong on something. You know, it's possible. Actually having a visibility in this province has been an uphill battle. And it's something that we are constantly working on. I like the fact that election campaigns tends to draw out more media and they tend to be asking questions and they tend to want to have some of our time. And I look on it as an opportunity to get the message out. And if they all go away after the election campaign, well, at least we got our message out. And we can build from there. It's a long process. Like I said on Saturday, we play the long game.
We do have an outflow of skilled workers in this province. We do have very good training, world-class training going on for skills acquisition, especially in trades. And then we find an outflow towards the western provinces. Is there any way the Greens platform can offer a solution to that that isn't a Band-Aid solution like you've been referring to?
We have to take a look at how we educate people. Again, not a Band-Aid solution. We have to look at how we educate people. Are we educating them for the... It's great to have skills, but are we educating them for the skills that we need? Or are we educating them for the skills that are needed somewhere else? I like to draw comparisons to the Swiss model. It's not perfect as far as I'm concerned, but they do things very differently. I guess it's an unfair comparison because they actually have a national education strategy. Canada doesn't have one. Because they say, well, education, that's provincial, we don't touch it, which is unfortunate. But we have to look at what skills we want. I don't think we're making as good use of our community college system as we could. And I don't think that the skills we're necessarily training people for are applicable outside of, say, the HRM. If you look at employment figures, HRM's not doing nearly as badly as the rest of the province. We actually have two economies here. We have the economy of Halifax, and we have the economy of the rest of Nova Scotia. Halifax, not doing too bad. Nova Scotia, not doing so well. So how do we get these skills out into other parts of Nova Scotia? This is, again, something that you need a long-term strategy for. You need to be able to have, I guess, a greater sense of entrepreneurship as well, and support for entrepreneurship. We can't all be shipbuilders, and we can't all be IT professionals in downtown buildings, but we have opportunities outside of HRM that are going, they're being abandoned, and we need to look at how we get people out there and improve the economic outlook in local economies.
In particular in Nova Scotia, we've seen initiatives that would potentially provide jobs to the rural areas, or at least the notion of providing jobs to them. I'm thinking of aquaculture in particular, attempts at gas exploration, in particular in Lake Ainslie. These are initiatives that arguably might provide jobs to rural, but there's been a very strong environmental push against these jobs. Where are we then in terms of providing sustainable alternatives to environment? And in the same question, perhaps, where does your party stand on aquaculture and fracking in particular?
We have firm policy initiatives against fracking and open pen aquaculture. Most people are not aware that there are several land-based aquaculture concerns here in Nova Scotia. They're enormously successful. They're quite sustainable. They make great use of recycling a lot of the systems that they make use of, and they get absolutely no support. The open pen aquaculture industry has always, whenever there's an announcement like this, oh, we're going to create up to 350 jobs, or as many as 350 jobs, you always have to look at that qualifier, up to. Well, how many did they actually create? A few dozen, maybe. But it's the number you hear, but you don't hear the up to or as many as. It's something that is used to, you don't notice the qualifier. I am a strong opponent of open pen aquaculture because it is one example where you don't take into account the what I call externalities, the costs of those operations when they decide to go somewhere else. Who's paying for all of those cleanup costs? Yeah, you get cheap fish. That's great. But if it costs you $10 million to clean up the mess after these people go, it's not such an attractive option anymore. And this is what we talk about when we talk about full cost accounting. We have to take these kinds of externalities into consideration when we're planning before this stuff actually starts. It's the same with fracking. Fracking's very big in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas. Ohio has never experienced so many earthquakes in their entire history. They had over 126 earthquakes last year, every one of them attributable to multiple fracking pads. The floods in Colorado over the past week, they've put enormous physical strain on pipelines. Pipelines are buckling. Open fracking containment facilities have been inundated, and the fluid has been dragged out with the rest of the water. Again, who's paying for that cleanup? Who's going to deal with that? What are the costs involved in that? These are questions that you have to ask before you say it's a really good deal. because you're going to get cheap gas. You're not going to get cheap gas because you're going to end up paying for the cleanup in the long run. I mean, Dr. Tony Ingrafia, who was one of the people who, one of the geological engineers who designed fracking technology originally, is one of the most outspoken opponents of it, because he says all fracking wells will fail over time, all of them. So I have to put stock in that. These are people who know what they're talking about. And I have to say that, you know, unless you come up with an absolutely 100% foolproof guarantee that this is not going to cause major systemic damage to communities, that it's just not a good idea. Or that you're going to clean it up and leave it exactly the way it was when you found it, then I'm sorry, I'm not going to listen.
Let's look at the way that power gets generated in this province and the rates that we're paying for it. We're still largely a coal-addicted province in terms of how we're generating our power. That has effects on people that both live near the power plants as well as our own general health. Nova Scotia has a very high rate of cancer in general. Is there a way to get off of coal, or does it come back to the individual to reduce their own consumption? I know you're talking about not having large-scale initiatives, perhaps, but is it a matter of, you know, outfitting every house with a solar panel? Are there wind farms available? What's your plan to get us off coal?
Again, it has to be a long-term plan. It's not something that will happen in an election cycle or two. I would... And again, thinking small, thinking locally, thinking regionally, mega projects are not flexible enough to be a solution for everybody. Conservation has been vastly underrated as an effective tool in our energy strategy. We also don't take advantage of our own personal initiatives to do something about it. If the land use bylaws allowed me, I'd have a couple of vertical wind turbines on the roof of my house right now. We don't allow photovoltaics into the feed-in tariff. Why not? We need to start looking at that. There are cities in North America that have had solar projects for years, very successful. Where they pay the cost of the installation, and instead of paying the power company, you pay it on your property tax. So you're paying the same amount until it's paid off, but at that point, you know, it's your energy. These are things that we can do on a residential basis and on a small business basis to... Holy cow, I mean, painting your roof white, how big a deal is that? But the amount of savings in heating and cooling costs is absolutely amazing. It's personal initiatives that need to be fostered, and they need to be encouraged financially, as opposed to the big projects. The big projects are fine, I suppose, but the more people that are personally self-sufficient, I think the better off we're all going to be.
Let's look at students and education at a post-secondary level. Halifax, you know, there's a huge influx of young people that come in, but they're leaving with, you know, an average of $30,000+ in debt, which has a huge impact on what they do and what they choose to do in their future. Have you got any solution to that problem?
Student debt is a major detriment to an entire generation contributing to the economic well-being of our society. There's no way you're going to buy a house. There's no way you're going to be investing in your own personal future while you still have massive student debt. There are some things that can be done in the short term, and certainly a moratorium on interest on student loans would be an initial start. Having a fairly long one, not just a 1-year or a 2-year moratorium on student interest. Let's extend that. Of course, this is something that you have to do in tandem with the federal government and with the banks that actually lend the money. But it's something that we can be at least discussing in a in a rational manner. As well, forgiving parts of loans for having people locate in areas of the province where their skills are needed. Why can't we forgive, let's say, doctors and nurses who want to go to, if they'll locate in the Southwest rather than in Capital Health? Not everyone needs to work at Capital Health. You know, there's a beautiful new hospital in Truro. It's understaffed. There's, you know, you go down to the Southwest to Yarmouth. There's a great hospital there. It's understaffed. So let's say, okay, you go down there, you work there for 7 years. You work there for 7 years, we'll forgive you student loan. Boom, there you go. Now, okay, so you're not a doctor or a nurse. You're just a student. Your skill level is somewhere else. We have to start, again, looking at the general budgetary needs of the entire province. If we can have sufficient efficiencies in our budgetary process, we can actually eliminate the need for tuition altogether. Other jurisdictions have done this very successfully. There are models that we can borrow, that we can adapt to use in this province with very little effort at all. We refuse to do that. We just say, oh, well, we can't do that. We can't give them a free education. Sure we can. Because if you graduate from university without a huge student loan, you're ready to take part in the economic activity of the province. I mean, we're a consumer-based economy. If there's no money to buy things, how's the economy going to do well?
Now, what about healthcare in the province? We are a graying population here.
Yep.
Does it need fixing on any massive scale? And if so, how do you plan on doing that?
As with all departments, there are efficiencies that you can find without affecting employment numbers. I mean, we don't need to have mass layoffs in order to fix health care. And I'm not certain that cutting the health regional health boards down from 10 to 3 or to 2 or whatever is going to give you those efficiencies. I mean, total administrative costs in the healthcare budget are just under 5% right now, and they're going down. Reducing the regional health boards is not going to contribute significantly to that. What we can do with healthcare, though, is that we can create healthier lives for people so that they don't actually need as much access to our healthcare system as we do now. Healthcare encompasses a lot more externalities, again, than just hospitals and doctors and the like. It involves nutrition. It involves our agriculture industry. It involves education. It involves getting people to live healthier lives. If you live healthier lives, you're actually going to cut healthcare costs. How are you going to live healthier lives if you're on welfare or if you're on EI? Well, as I was mentioning earlier, implementing a guaranteed annual income is a really good start. And removing that, not only the stigma of poverty, but removing your ability to access other parts of the economy and to remove that stress of not having enough money to get through the month, really, it has a tremendous impact on people's psyche, and it has a tremendous impact on their personal health. Stress is one of the great killers and one of the great contributors to our high health care costs. What's the greatest stress that people have? It's money. Okay, and a guaranteed annual income is going to reduce that kind of stress. It's also going to reduce the duplication in bureaucracy. It's going to reduce the stigma of, oh, you're poor. And it's actually going to be cheaper to operate in the long run. So there's actually efficiencies that we can have by having a single system like that.
Perhaps one of the criticisms against the Green Party is these initiatives are going to cost some money. Are you looking at restructuring tax brackets? How are we going to provide for incentives for guaranteed annual income, which do sound like a good idea from a variety of levels, but perhaps are also off-putting to individual capitalist-based people who might consider that they'll be taxed more if they vote for Green?
all of our initiatives are designed to be revenue neutral at worst, or cost effective or cost saving at best. We try to design all of our policy options to be at least revenue neutral. So if you're, you know, our policy is to tax the things you don't like and remove the tax on the things that you do like. And again, there are successful models that we can draw on from other jurisdictions that have been doing this for quite some time. Our whole budgetary process and our departmental infrastructure is really something that needs a serious looking at, and we need to see some systemic change there. We know that there are efficiencies that we can have without creating more unemployment. Again, I'm not talking layoffs, I'm talking redirection of employment. Departmental efficiencies, if we're looking at, say, 3, maybe 4% departmental efficiencies, will more than pay for any of these programs. And I tell you again that running something like a guaranteed annual income, which would run right through the tax department, which is already doing much the same anyway, is a far less expensive option than propping up the poverty industries that we have now. And I know there's opposition. People say, oh, you're giving people money for nothing. Well, we're doing that with EI and with welfare and old age security now. You're not complaining about that. It's actually more expensive to operate all of these particular bureaucracies than it would be to operate one.
Does the Green Party in this province have a specific platform when interacting with the First Nations peoples of Nova Scotia?
Our policy document has quite an extensive Aboriginal input. We believe that we are right now sitting on Mi'kmaq territory, and we are great believers in the UN Charter that has not really been, it's been given lip service, but it has not actually had any follow-through. We would certainly like to see, if we, in our platform of electoral reform, we would certainly like to see proportional Aboriginal representation in the legislature. We would like to see proportional African Nova Scotian legislation in the legislature. We believe that any resource development that is done in this province that is in any way impacts on the Aboriginal community, they have to be involved, they have to approve it, and they have to have a clear understanding of what it is and what they're going to get out of it. Otherwise, it's a no-go.
And then a specific environmentally related question, and that is Boat Harbor. It continues to be this incredible disaster.
It's a disaster.
That does not appear to be an election issue for any of the other parties. Do you have a solution to Boat Harbor?
No, we don't. It's one of these disasters that is just... As you say, it's not being talked about in the campaign. It's largely been ignored in the media. Certainly the Sierra Club Atlantic has been trying to keep it in the forefront as much as possible, and the media co-op as well. The consultation process around Boat Harbor has been a failure because people aren't coming to the table. They don't want to talk to us. And it's difficult to talk to people who don't want to talk to you. And I think the first thing that any government is going to have to do is to force people to the table. There may be some way to do that through sanctions. I'm guessing here on this one. But until we get everybody that is involved seated at the same table and talking to each other, nothing's going to happen. And it's horribly unfortunate. It's horribly unfortunate because it can, solutions can be found. But
are there any other aspects to your campaign you want to talk about here that we haven't touched upon?
Well, we're very big on electoral reform, always have been. Proportional representation, whatever form that takes, is a big part of our platform and our policy documents. It's an idea whose time has come, and more people are talking about electoral reform as a way to actually get some real representation in their legislative assemblies. And I think until that happens, you're still going to witness the apathy and anger that is so prevalent in the voting public today that really, really disturbs me. Because it allows people like Stephen Harper to take control of a country. And things like that bother me immensely. And I know this, one of the good solutions is going to be a system of proportional representation and the move to coalition and consensus. It works well again in other jurisdictions. We just don't talk about it and we don't want to adapt. I think at this point it's adapt or die. You know, let's. You've tried all of these other solutions and you keep reintroducing them and you keep saying, well, this time we're going to do that. You know, it's going to work. Well, no, it's not. You know, it's time. It really is, and the time is now.
Thanks for your time.
Cool. Thanks, Miles.